real quick, and I just passed this out, the names of those that have agreed to be on that task force. We're planning on having the first meeting next Thursday at the Chateau, and we'll talk a little bit, and they can tour. I don't know if how many of them have been there, but some of them were people that in the stakeholder groups that said, give us some names, or give me some names, which they did. And some obviously are representing groups that, as Mr. Beneke here, is on the Heritage Preservation Commission, but also obviously wears another very significant hat, being in the construction business. Mayo Clinic on the EDA, their new person there, who's done a lot of work up in St. Paul on development. And also down, the one that was kind of interesting was from the Chamber of Commerce. The person is a staff person with Weiss Builders. He has done a lot of work, Ryan Peterson, with, I think it's the, is it Schmidt Brewery that's up in St. Paul that's now being converted mm-hmm. into lofts or condos? So he's done a lot of that work. And there were some other people that were kind of names were tossed around, and ultimately that's who they suggested. Doug Holton, obviously, over at Mayo has done a lot with facilities, and we'll have that perspective. Jane Beisel is one that between she and her significant other, Steve Williams, have done a lot of stuff in getting money for different grants up at the Plummer House, and done that wonderful display out at the fairgrounds on some of those historic things, WPA and other projects that have been around. So Jim Fricker is a relatively new person, but has his own business of, I think, restoring videotapes and different things, but a guitarist and a artist on his own right in that. Don't know if you have any other questions. I thought, I know there's a couple on there that we sometimes have odds with as the Heritage Conservancy Group. That, I thought, if it was either John Kriesel or Kevin Lund, I asked John, I says, why don't you and Kevin decide? And that's who they came back with. And, of course, Fricker is on the side with that the Arts Collaborative group. So I think we've got a fairly good cross-section of the community, and we'll have staff support from, Lisa upstairs will help with any minimal minutes that we will have. Steve Schmidt, and of course Aaron, has done a lot of work already with contacting some of those other theaters, of which a couple of those I've been to, the North Shore, which is the one that Duluth is just starting to restore or hope to start. They have an estimated cost of that about $29 million, so hopefully we're not in that particular ballpark. But it's a mess, that particular theater. We're not in that kind of a situation. I've been at the one in St. Cloud as well. So our first meeting next Thursday, I think, will be more so just kind of getting to know each other, who's on the committee, the task force, and start just thinking about what it is that will be going somewhere soon. I think it would be having somebody that's in that business of restoration to give an assessment on the building as to if you did this is what it probably would be, and if you do that, it's another thing. So I think the two big things is I call it, one would be if it goes back to being a performing arts, the other one I would just call being a hall, where we may not take out the first floor, which is flat now, but if you're performing arts, it's going to have to be probably a raked floor again. So we'll see. So I don't know if you have any questions on any of this.
Will these meetings be open to the public?
Yes.
Okay. So they'll be published on the city website?
I believe so, yep.
Okay. Any other questions?
So that's where we're at. Looking forward to it. Obviously, there were a lot of people that are disappointed that didn't get put on there. I have a file full of names, both phone calls and emails and texts that wish they could have been on there. But I think at somewhere, you know, the public will always be invited to make comments as we move forward and know where we're at.
Okay.
That's it.
All right. Anything else?
Question.
Yep. Yes.
Yep. Stephen, is this going to be approved by the council or not? I
don't think it was set. I don't think it was set up that way, but that's our first year guidance decision.
Well, and I asked it. We said it was going to come back to council for approval. So,
well, the mayor kind of.
Yeah, I didn't know if it needed approval from.
I think that's between you and.
That would be nice, I guess, if you endorsed it. I see it as different than our commissions and other committees. We've had other task forces where we've not come back.
Well, I just specifically asked that question.
Okay,
I understand that, but that's between you and the mayor, sort of decide how you want to do that.
Can we just do it by consent? I don't have any issues, so. I'd always love to see the gender and diversity make up a little bit more reflective of the community, but I understand you. It's challenging.
Tried that too.
I know it's hard.
All right. So, permission to go forward.
So, by consent, you're approving the appointments.
Absolutely.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. All right. We'll move back to our agenda.
Thank you.
And I do have a couple of walk-on items, so we'll try to keep moving along. First up is a discussion of the City Hall roof repairs. I assume Beneke and company are here to talk about that, or Mr. Quinholz?
Yes, Aaron Beneke and Steve Sorensen have been involved in the preliminary investigations that have gone on to date on the building, and they are here to indicate what their findings were and what else needs to be done with that particular roof and the probable costs of doing that work.
Okay.
So I don't know if Steve or Aaron, which we want to take off, Steve?
I'll probably take the lead here and kind of talk through at least we have some graphics to help you understand what the situation is. This is the City Hall wing. You all recognize the atrium in the middle there. And I think about a year ago, we were contacted by Jenny King to provide some collaborative input to Beneke Construction, who had been looking at these issues for maybe even as long as 2 years. So we've been, ever since, we've been collaborating on what to do, where to go, and.
Excuse me for a minute. We have had experience of some leaks for probably the last 10 years or so, mainly on the third floor. And every time it rains, we've had leaking problems, and they've been getting a little bit worse. So we haven't looked at to see what our cause of those leaks were.
It's been a nasty, nasty problem. So this slide shows the upper roof, or the third level roof, which is higher than the second level roof. Those are the two main roofs, other than the copper roofs on the domes themselves. It's a complex roof system, and there are interfaces of the roof system with walls everywhere you turn. You got, if this works, maybe it won't.
It won't work on that.
It disappeared on there. Anyway, the red walls are building enclosure walls, which meet the two roof levels, so there's issues there. And then we have screen walls, which wrap around the building walls on multiple levels, then we have parapet walls, all of which interface with the roof system. They're kind of depicted in on the roof plan on the right. So it's a very complicated roof system. This indicates the log of all the roof leaks that have been plaguing the building on both the third floor and the second floor, some on the second floor for probably, sounds like historically, maybe 10 years, maybe up to 10 years. The building is 20, this wing is 20 years old, so these roof leaks have been around for quite a while. They've been addressed promptly by the staff and stopped where they can, but there's a fair amount of persistence. And if you notice on this slide, the south wing, the piece we're sitting in right now, and that south rotunda, there's not a lot of evidence of historic roof leaks down there. Most of the roof leaks have appeared on the other major portion of the wing, but they're scattered all over. Go ahead, Eric.
And this might not make sense to folks who haven't been up there, but these are actually screen walls that go around the mechanical system. There's one on the north edge and one on the
cooling
south.
Tower inside of each one of those. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunches of walls up there. It's a complicated roof system. Where it surfaces is inside of the space, and you've probably had meetings in rooms where maybe there were buckets on the table and ceiling tile falling out.
So room 320.
There's an example, and of course then it works its way down and drywall peels, etc. So upon investigation on the roof, we see you first go up. When there's roof leaks, you go up and you look at the roof system, you look at the roof membrane, you figure there's roof leaks all over. But as you begin to study it more, you begin to see that these walls, these various walls, screen walls that are screening, just visually screening louvers and things on the other set of walls on the inside, you start to see things like this, and it begins to lead you to believe there's another observation of water coming in through a door. That's into a mechanical room. So what we had proposed was that we take a test area that encompasses all of these various conditions on the roof, and then have Beneke begin to disassemble the construction, take it apart so we can see what's going on, because it clearly was not just a roof membrane. It wasn't just a roofing problem. It was much, much broader. So we began to remove some coping stones, and it began to prove out. There were a lot of surprises. There were surprises pretty much everywhere you turn. But it's really a good thing that this was disassembled, that the demolition, if you will, happened to take a look at what was discovered. So you can see precast concrete was deteriorating here, simply from moisture hidden within the system. And then you can see a slot there in the construction. Any moisture getting into that point can work its way down. Ultimately, it comes down and comes into underneath the roof system. So a leak may not even be a roof leak. It may be a wall leak in many cases. There's some of the base brick that was just totally disintegrating once you got inside of the wall system itself. We found anchors that were galvanized anchors, not stainless steel like we would use today, but as they begin to rust and corrode, they expand significantly and they pop off or spall off the face of the precast concrete. The tan layer there is what you see on the building. It's architectural precast. It looks like stone, but it's architectural precast, and it was decomposing. The problems on the roof and with the walls and the deterioration, I would say, and Aaron, I don't know if you would agree, but I think it probably far exceeds what a 20-year-old building should be looking like. So I think it's a good thing to have discovered it. It's a good thing to be dealing with it. There's a test cut through the roofing membrane near the base of a screen wall. And I don't know if you can tell it from the photograph, but that's moisture. The insulation has been pulled out, and that's moisture down there on the roof deck, on the structural roof.
You can see the backside of that membrane is wet with some dry spots on it, and this is all moisture in there.
So the discovery of so much moisture actually inside of the roof system, which includes the membrane and all that insulation, is not good. At best, you'd get maybe an R value of 8 out of that assembly, even though the actual insulation is worth more than that, but the waterlogged condition of it means that thermally is not performing very well. That's a little bit of a blurry picture. That's another shot of more water at the base of a wall on the right coming down to the roof deck. So what we did then was we collaborated on, you tear this apart, you can't leave it torn apart, you have to put it back together. So we devised collaboratively approach, which put the systems back together that we took apart in a way that we think it should be done today. And how things were done back then and how things are done today, it's always an evolution of the science. So it's definitely a far greater improvement of a detailed system. Everything that is out of sight from the public side, we created screen walls, which are rain screen walls, which allow the any moisture infiltration to drain down freely on the inside, stopped by a moisture, water, and air barrier there. On the roof, we are adding, where the roofing went back in the adjacent to these areas, we added a vapor barrier on the roof deck, which wasn't part of the original roofing, but it's an advisable thing to do these days. Some other pictures of work in process here, just to give you an idea. This is an area where there's a large intake louver, which was rusting out and causing leaks. And it was replaced with a new louver, and the entire opening is reflashed. And you can see the backside of one of those screen walls down the line there that but one more there where we put the rain screen wall on it. We also added insulation to the exterior side of the walls that enclose space. When it's behind the screen wall, it doesn't show. We have the opportunity to do that, so that was chosen. New doors, frames coming in off the roof, which were also rusting out, new thresholds. The band of brick, this is a key thing. You've probably seen around town these masonry restoration jobs where there's courses of masonry removed in a segmented way, and the through wall flashing is installed in a proper way. That's what those bottom three courses of brick there were removed and replaced. And and you can see the through wall flashing extending out there.
You can also
go ahead.
You can see that space right in between these two brick joints. That's an open wafer card flat, and then what it does is it really allows the water to very freely eliminate from the wall. And different than the rope weeps, which were in place previously, that just aren't going to allow the water to get out as easily. This also allows an amount of air back there to help ventilate the wall.
And then while while this work was going on, it necessitated the removal of on the left side. Those are fluorescent exterior lights, which highlight the building, the accent lights on the building. And it's intended to replace them when they go back in with LED lights, which cut down significantly on the wattage. They're longer life by far, so there's less relamping going on. And I think it was on the 17th when they tested that. I think, Stephen, you were involved in looking at the various light colors that are available with LED lights, so that was agreed upon. But these are much more durable lights that will require less maintenance, and relamping won't be the issue that it is with the old T12. Those were the old T12 fluorescent lamps and fixtures that are out there. So as these screen walls, which wrap the whole atrium, for example, get disassembled and reassembled, then those lights will have to be removed and the replacements will be LED fixtures. I think that's kind of our summary here. A little bit of highlight here is that the new roof will be insulated with R30, which is better than what was there, but it's far better than wet insulation. the LED lighting is easily 35% more efficient than the T12s. we will have far better detailed assemblies, flashing details, curbs, all of that kind of thing. The material would be direct purchased by the city, saving sales tax, and all the labor costs of this process are just transparent and open book. That's kind of the update for you here, but it's an ongoing process because what we did was so far was we did this in the test area that was shown on that one site plan. I don't know how far back that goes, but the test area was the, maybe I went by it.
So the good news with the test area is that area has been completed from a moisture mitigation system standpoint since January 1. So it's been tested by Mother Nature since then, and we haven't had any failures. So that's very important. The louver and the door replacement, that happened in June and July of this summer, so that hasn't been tested as long. But this section of the system has been tested for each of the seasons, and it's been successful.
The test area that we selected involved a building enclosure wall, a screen wall, and all of the associated stuff around that, so we think we picked up every condition on the roof that we could probe into, and it was directly above the break room, right? Which maybe a lot of you have been in and noticed consistent roof or ceiling tile out, roof leaks there. We're also, the roof drain bodies to avoid condensation are being insulated. All of the roof drainage is interior roof drains set into the roof system and anchored to the concrete slab. Those roof drains needed to be insulated because some condensation on those from during cold weather, during the winter months, is probably has been happening. And I think, like Aaron said, I don't think there's been any report of any additional roof leaks under the area that we did this work. So call it an exploration if you want. But
you're going to address the remaining fix and
cost
and the method?
Yeah. Yep.
So what we suggest doing is continuing on with the work that has been done to date, and starting in September and going around the remaining sections of the building and removing the areas that need to be removed. This time we'll have the opportunity of having the city directly by the architectural precast, which will do two things. It's going to save money. That's also going to allow us to, we're going to be able to disassemble, and any pieces that can be saved will be able to be identified and be saved for potential reuse. We'll go and get all the removals done and get you watertight by the end of the year, although the project wouldn't appear done at the end of the year because the precast takes about 12 weeks to get. So 12 weeks after we order it, which we wouldn't order it until we had identified all that needed to be replaced. So moving into the winter of the year, as you saw, the strap anchors, they're actually welded connections. Those connections can be done in the field in the wintertime, which is good news. So as those arrive in February and March, we would be able to install those. And then in the spring of the year, we would be able to finish up the roofing and any of the miscellaneous portions of the project that need to be wrapped up, so that would be completed by July 1.
So if I understand correctly, you've pretty much focused on the test area. So the majority of the project remains overall.
Yes.
And what price tag are we talking about, and where do those funds come from? That's probably a question for Stephen.
You can handle the cost, I'll handle the funds.
Okay.
Take your poison.
The engineering portion of it, the construction portion of it, which would include the lighting and the re-roofing, including all work done to date, would be in the $1.7 million.
Does that include interior reconstruction, or is this just the roof?
This is just exterior. Now, what that doesn't account for is what the city would actually be purchasing themselves. That would come out of that budget, so you'd actually be spending less than that.
The 1.7 covers the work you've already done also?
Yes.
And where is it? Where are you suggesting that would come?
Well, we've had a fund for years for the city hall maintenance. And we have $406,000 in there, and I would prefer not to drain that completely out. So I would like to recommend that we'd have $200,000 from that. Then we had another pot of money that we kind of bogarted for a number of years that we dealt when we were back and doing an industrial subdivision when we had trying to get PEMSTAR going and that, and we sold some property. So we have $1.8 million in that fund, and I really kind of hate to get rid of that money because all our little pots are going, but so I'd recommend that the majority of the money comes from that account to that $1.8 million.
What do you call that account again?
It's the number is just J20. We bogarted it. I'm not sure if that's right. We've just been kind of saving that money, and with this other little pots of money that slowly get used up over time. We've had that money for a long time. As I said, there's $1.8 million in there. I would recommend that we take $200,000 from our account for the City Hall maintenance account, CIP account, and with the remainder coming out of that $1.8 million that I suggested that we have. I just indicated that we have. Now the other question is that we have never had plans and specifications prepared, so we haven't had that expense. And so we've had Steve Sorensen working with Beneke to do it, and we'd like to continue with that arrangement.
I have a question. Have we seen any history of the same sort of problems on the county side of the complex?
We haven't investigated the county roof. Anecdotally, I'm thinking that they've had problems, but I don't know how they've handled them or what they've done. And I don't know. I'm looking at Jenny because I figure she talks to the county side of the wall too. But I don't know.
I'm not aware of them.
If there were anything that were undertaken, we were not part of it. So I don't know.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, obviously, similar design and architectural design and similar construction time frame. So
a similar design on where we connect, other than that, is a different roof structure.
Yeah, I think
there's stream walls and things that City Hall has that the county does not have.
There's a complexity on this roof, which is part of the architecture, part of what it looks like, that I don't think are involved at all on the county roof.
Okay. And then the last question I had is, part of your investigation, did you see any evidence of mold or those sorts of issues to deal with?
No. Which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Which is a very good thing. And I think, the first and the most obvious thing is, if left unattended, left dealt with, the Minnesota winters, the freeze-thaw of moisture inside of walls, moisture behind pieces of walls, all of that stuff not only works its way down and comes out in ceilings, but it also just starts to decompose the walls themselves.
Okay, Mr. Campion.
So on some of your slides, we saw the interior repercussions of some of the stuff that's going on. So Steve, I don't know, what's the plan for rehabbing the interior of the building as well?
It would be my suggestion not to address the interior until all of the exterior has been repaired and there's no leaks.
I don't think there's any significant interior.
Crew, right?
think your own crews have been periodically replacing ceiling tile, and then it leaks again, and you replace it again and again. Well, but it's,
I don't want to replace any more ceiling tiles. They're just going to get wet.
It's probably not high, you know, high cost type stuff on the inside. It's probably patching, drywall, painting, and replacing ceiling tile.
I thought we saw, can you go to a couple of the slides? You had a crack that was running down the wall that looked pretty significant. I guess I don't.
It's just sheet plaster.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah. That's right next to the elevator. It's just peeling paint.
That's peeling paint.
Sure, it does look cheaper.
I agree.
But that's much cheaper than the masonry.
Yeah, and so the other side is, have you done, so we had a test area. I mean, we don't really know what we're going to run into in other parts, right? We haven't done sampling of the other areas to know.
I would say that with fair certainty, there could be more surprises. But,
okay.
But I think it was pretty good approach to try all of the various types of circumstances that you have on a roof like that and do it in a localized area, and I think it was pretty informative. So we'd probably be anticipating similar things, but there could be another curveball here or there. And I think you need an approach where you can address the situation as it comes up. And it's our building. It's our city hall. I think you should take care of it. So
this means
couple questions. Mr. Beneke, you look like you were going to mention something about the mold. Are you in agreement with Mr. Sorensen that the likelihood is
unlikely? Anything that I saw would have been on the exterior of the building.
So we still may have some more surprises.
I don't think there'll be surprises on the interior.
Okay. The energy savings with the lighting, it's great that we'll be able to have a more efficient light source. Were there other any areas of energy efficiency that you could recommend or might be a possibility?
The new roof with the vapor barrier down first, I think you're going to see a substantial savings in the energy. Right now, that soggy roof, like Steve said, it may be an R8. It is probably less than that, which is not much.
I was going to quiz you about the R30. I've heard in some cases with the green building standards, people are doing like an R60. Is there much to be gained by doing something like that?
It's a diminishing return.
It's just not much at that point, yeah.
It starts to.
So R30 is pretty sufficient.
I think it's pretty point. Good.
You might run out of parapet as well if you added much more insulation.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
A thickness issue with the flashing locations and the like. But
you know, this is one of the buildings I've brought up on the B3 energy rankings on the state. We're about 200% of the benchmark building now, and we're a little bit, I think it's 190% of the benchmark building. How much do you think some of these are going to address it? Is it going to be noticeable on that, or?
Michael, I would have to say it would be noticeable, but I'm not skilled enough to extrapolate that into a meaningful number. But I would think it would have to certainly help.
Is there any with doing this work? Is there any other energy improvements given the relatively poor performance of the building that we should be thinking about at the same time?
There may be in your systems and how you operate them. I'm not sure. I think you're on a building control, automated building control system here. So I'm supposing that you're pretty dialed in on that, or that somebody's kind of on top of that. But other than over time replacing worn out equipment, which is always more efficient, the next generation of everything is more efficient. We did evaluate the cooling towers up there since we're changing, removing screen walls and whatnot, if the cooling towers needed to be replaced on the kind of the north end and the south end. But they were in good condition, and they've been well cared for. And the cooling tower is a cooling tower is a cooling tower, and they don't really, you don't really have, there's no reason to replace them. They've been cared for, and typically cooling towers, you just, if something goes down, you replace that element. You don't replace a whole cooling tower, which are very expensive. So that, it's probably no answer, maybe, to your question,
no,
but I don't know any more than that.
I mean, it doesn't sound like there's extra insulation or sealing that needs to be done at the same time, and that would be the big thing you gain when you're tearing apart the roof.
I think we're taking every advantage to do as much as can be done as part of rebuilding this and insulating those roof drain bodies. I don't know how big are those? They're probably 2 foot in diameter, the footprint of them anyway. So there's some heat loss that's been going there that will be trimmed back.
So many of those details are going to be, we're really adding insulation to details, not just for energy savings, but really to eliminate any condensation.
That's the main, that's correct. That's been the main goal, is to stop moisture intrusion, and where moisture can get into walls, having a path for it to get out.
Because we're making some fairly substantial energy improvements on the roof, is there a bit, do we have the ability to use the GSP program for funding part of that?
That I don't know.
Do you have any idea on that?
I think you could get some energy rebate from RPU on the, for those lights. It's not a big portion of the number.
The energy rebates from RPU are great for everyone except the city, because it's kind of the same pot of money. Yeah. But, and the last question, Stephen, for you is the building is 20 years old, and there's going to be other needs coming up. And if we go ahead and do this, I just want to know that we're going to put the annual contributions to that maintenance account that's sufficient to line up with our needs. Do we have a forecast of what those maintenance needs are and how much we're putting in there?
One more time, I'm not sure about
that. Yeah, I'm concerned because there's going to be other maintenance needs coming up on the facility. It's 20 years old.
Right.
Are we putting enough into that capital account to cover our needs going forward?
Well, we started out a few years ago with $700,000 in there, and we whittled it down. We put $100,000 in it last year. So under this scenario that I just recommend, we keep $200,000 in there and bring it back to the council if and when we need more money into that account.
So we are not making annual contributions to that account?
No, we have not.
And I would tend to agree. I mean, this good, prudent thought to add to that fund, you know, at least some modest amount annually. You're going to need it eventually. It's not if, but
in,
when.
In particular, the HVAC system is 20 years old.
So I mean, if we have the wherewithal, we really should consider that as part of our capital fund.
Under that scenario, then I would just as soon leave the $405,000 in there and take everything out of that other account I mentioned.
I mean, I want, and what I'd really like to see as part of this is, you know, our own folks or these folks can come up with a probable 30-year roadmap for what our capital maintenance expenses are going to be. And, you know, let's make sure that that account matches that. And if, you know, if what's in there is enough, it's fine. Otherwise, you know, we need to...
Yeah. One of our problems has been, of course, with the amount of money we put in the CIP and all the other needs, it's difficult to grow in this money by much.
Another one of those choices we have to make, Mr. Camp.
How long do we predict that a repair like this would last? I mean, we're 20 years into it now. We're doing the first one. Is it 20 years from now we're revisiting the same problem? These materials rated for longer than that? What can we expect?
So the roof itself would have a 15-year warranty on the roof. I would expect the roof to last longer than that with proper maintenance. And the masonry, if it doesn't see the deterioration that it's seen, which we're doing all of these things to avoid that, I don't think that you would need to address the masonry again for another 20, 25 years.
I just wanted to make sure I understand. You're saying once you guys sign off on the repair being complete, we have 15 years from now, then that we would be warranted to have you come back and fix anything we find that's craftsmanship related?
So it'd be, you get a warranty for the roof, and we get a 2-year warranty on the workmanship on the masonry, but I'm expecting it to last much longer than that. Am I going to say that everything that's happened with this roof that I've taken 2 years to try to do it, collaboratively to try to find the solutions that I can promise that I'll come back and fix it forever?
No, right. Yeah, no, I don't think that's the expectation. If you wanted to offer, I'd be happy to accept. But
here's what I'll promise. I'll always come and look at it.
Hell of a good consultant.
Many of these problems, when people call, others run. We come.
I think what you could say is that I strongly believe that these walls are being reconstructed in the best possible way, and that this deterioration from the elements will not happen like it has happened in the first 20 years.
I do worry, though, that I'm wondering what happened when we purchased the building. I'm wondering if we got another council 15 years ago got the exact same promise, because, you know, this isn't the first building we've had like this where you surprise fix for $1.5 million. We don't like running into these, so I respect you guys for giving it to us blunt, but I'll give it right back blunt. And nobody, not a single one of us wants to spend $1.7 million on this repair. I don't think, I know what we need to do. That's not what we want to do. So I.
So Russ, I guess I'm wondering, who was the original contractor on the building?
Krauss Anderson was the contractor. The main designer was a guy by the name of Milo Thompson. And he was a well-respected architect out of Minneapolis, did the Lake Harriet band shell and a number of other things. So I think the council and the staff at that time was relatively pleased with Milo's design, and we didn't have any ideas that, of course, that his design may have some intrusion problems.
Well, I guess it just seems like, kind of with Nick on this, it seems like we've got all these, I don't know if we're just trying to go with cheapest bidder on some of these things and we end up with an inferior product down the road, but it seems like we've got skyways that leak and roofs that leak, and you know, our rec center, you take a look at some of the work that's done there, you know, everybody's falling in line to get these projects, and then when we get them, you know, in a few years it seems like they're falling apart, and then we got to, you know, lean on the taxpayer to pay to fix them, and it just seems like we should figure out a better way to do these things. And so, you know, I like the idea of trying to get some type of warranties, and somebody, I appreciate Beneke stepping up and saying we'll be there for it, we'll stand behind our work, but I just wonder if we've done that in the past with all the things we got, swimming pools that are falling apart, you know, just a lot of stuff that's really, you know, it seems like a lot of people up there want to bid, take the city's money on these projects, but there's not too many people around when we're having issues with them, and we end up holding the bag and having to fix it. So, you know, I think we've got a series of these things we've been dealing with, and we've got more of them probably coming, so it's a little frustrating on how we can try to figure out a business plan that makes sense in the long run, that really protects us and doesn't cause these huge expenses. So I don't know what the answer is, but no problem.
Dr. Hickey, you want to make a comment?
No, not at this time.
One question I had, the 1.7, is that a firm bid with hopefully some inclusion of contingency, or is that like a T&M estimate?
Yeah, what we're proposing is that the city buys all the major materials.
Right.
And so that would be the true cost, you're just paying that, and then on the labor, we'd be open book transparent on the number of hours that I actually do put in the fix. So I'm hoping that we would be able to come in significantly under that, but like Steve said, as we disassembled the building, we were surprised with what we saw in a few spots. I've been around long enough to know that there's a few more surprises, and so I think we need to have some flexibility to make sure that we're coming up with the best solutions.
Of that $1.7 million, we paid 90-some thousand so far.
Can I follow up, Mr. Becky? Is the work that you've seen done, is it just obsolete work that's been, is just 20 years ago is how they did it, or was there some shortcuts and things that weren't done properly when the original job was done?
From what we saw, everything was done for the drawings. There are a few details that we, you know, in hindsight, we thought maybe would be a little bit better.
We said it's pretty galvanized part pieces in there that they shouldn't use. I mean, things like that can cause problems and you know, accelerate issues.
Yes.
And those things were part of what we observed.
Yes, a few of those embeds were maybe closer to surface than what we would want to have now, mm-hmm. but it looked to be built as it was designed.
Okay. And okay. Thank you.
First of all, I guess that was a softball for best value in part, but I think besides that, I mean, we can bemoan this all we want. We've got a 20-year-old building, and we're going to have issues, and we're going to have a lot more issues going forward with the 20-year-old building, and that's just the way it is. And I don't think anyone here is on the position that we're going to let the roof leak, so it's just a matter of how we're going to pay for what needs to be done.
Yeah, to that end, the account with the PEMSTAR stuff, is there any background we need to know about how that money was earmarked at the time it was allocated? Are there any repercussions to drain this account?
No, there isn't any attachments to that money.
Seemed like it would have been some good rec center money, too.
Richard, do you have a comment?
Yeah, Steve, could you go to the red dot, right? I'll call the red dot slide. So maybe it would be beneficial for the council just to understand the full scope here, and maybe, Aaron, if you could help explain. Are you assuming that virtually every linear feet of these various interior architectural walls has to be is subject to the same type of repair that you showed in the test area, and does the project include a re-roofing of the entire surface of the building in addition to the areas that, where there's just repairs? So I think that that might help put into perspective maybe some of the cost.
Yes. Thanks, Richard. It does not include working on the copper roofs, but all the other roofs would be replaced throughout the project.
Because the copper roofs are adequate.
We think the copper roofs are fine. We're going to spend some time to investigate just a few of where the copper ties into the fascia. We think that the copper roofs in good shape. Then on the walls, these mechanical screen walls, these will be taken down completely and replaced. We're going to use different construction to eliminate the moisture problems there. This wall around here, that perimeter, is going to receive a through-wall flashing at the brick locations. Otherwise, that wall stays pretty well in place. And you can see where those leaks are. They are not nearly as common. When you come around to this wall, that wall is going to be completely removed except for the block and rebuilt. This wall gets a through-wall flashing around its entirety and gets a vapor barrier and additional insulation put on it. And it's kind of hard to visualize what's up there because it's a very complicated roof.
In between each one of those walls that he was pointing out is roofing system, regardless of how wide it is. So the re-roofing has to happen at the tail end of the wall reconstruction in every one of those nooks and crannies and narrow slivers. But the re-roofing of the majority of the roof, the bulk of the roof, the largest area, will actually happen in the spring. But you can't re-roof the roof before you take apart these walls, or you just destroy the work they've done. So it's kind of like you have to do things in that sequence in order to make it make sense. And
the point of my question was that there was a re-roofing going to happen to this building regardless of whether there was roof leaks.
Sooner or later.
So there was an inherent cost there that you're going to incur probably in the next 5 years, maybe.
And the lighting is another one.
Yes, yeah. So there was.
We had the roofing project on the list for a while. It's just that when we started trying to do it, we're like, wait a minute, this isn't all just a roof membrane issue. There's just all kinds of other stuff going on here. So that's why we've been spending 2 years trying to figure out where we're really at.
So what would the roof cost have been versus what we're going to be doing now? Do you have a third of it?
Bucks, I think.
About a third of it, yeah.
And the test area included one red dot. Is that what I see?
We picked that area because I think there was more dots, but the red dot kind of represented that break room.
Oh, okay.
And all of these red dots are actually where it was evidenced. It's kind of irrespective of what's happening on the roof, but you can sort of see a pattern there. You can see there's a relationship. They were all transferred from a floor plan, which the staff, Jess, and whoever was noting all the roof leaks over time, they were just sort of transferred up here onto the roof plane.
My only concern is if one red dot costs $90,000 and I'm a simple person, I'm out to $100,000. I mean, there's 24 red dots, that'd be $2.4 million. So I think we're getting a bargain if you'll commit to fixing the roof for $1.7 possibly. But I think we have to, I would like to know worst case what we're looking at here, because the bucket's only got $1.8. You know, we take both buckets, $2.2. So, you know, I don't know. Hopefully we'll know real quick how bad this gets.
All right. To Mr. Wojcik's point, I think we know we're going to do it. We're going to fix it.
Sure.
But we just need to bring this to closure and give some direction. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
Take it all out of that one fund and leave the City Hall Repair Fund alone.
I would be okay with that. I would just add too that I would like to see, and this for this one too, but certainly for all of our major capital assets, I want to see them dealt with, like utility fund, where we're gonna budget over time for these repairs, because this was coming up no matter what, and there's other things too, but you know, I do believe we're doing a lot better job with our buildings today than maybe we did in the past, but just from day one we need to be replenishing that capital fund, and you know, by having those funds too, they do help with our budgetary reserves as well, and it doesn't have to be done all at once. I get that that's kind of a task when you look at our major assets, but you know, and then you know, if we're not going to properly fund the capital maintenance of our buildings, then that's on us, not you.
Yeah, we're doing a disservice to future councils.
Yep.
Any other final comments?
Should we reimburse the leftover back to the City Hall fund? I mean,
no, that's not, because we ought to have to put some CIP monies into there last year and the year before, so.
Okay.
All right, so take it all out of the $1.8 million fund.
And then you're agreeing that we proceed with these gentlemen to finish it as we have been doing.
I don't hear that we have an option.
Okay. Well, the other way, we'd have to take time to put plans and specifications together and put it out to bid.
Yeah, no, this is...
Now, I did hear, I was in the criminal justice meeting last evening, and Judge Williamson was talking about they had some water problems in their part of the building. I don't know if it's part of their construction project, but it was literally raining water into one of the
I think that was much been part of what they've done on that face going up, my limited understanding of that.
So they've got perhaps some on their own issues to deal with.
I hope they fix it.
Stephen, with what you just said, I mean, with the best value system, does it make sense to try to see what other options there are out there? Is this just because we've got somebody there?
I think so, since we got somebody there that knows what the system has been, what they've found, and what they've fixed, is that we should continue with them.
The time we can use to do that process would not be helping our buildings.
I would be right with you, but I just think that roofing warranty is going to be so standard across the board that I don't think anyone's going to give us a 25 or anything.
And I'd hate to leave it that we go through that, to take the time it would take to go through the process. It just puts the building in more shape.
The other way would probably take us till the spring before we ever got anybody going on it.
But in all due respect to Vanicky, you know, there's a lot of people out there. How did this get started when they were in checking on this? So they just get called?
Professional services contract. I mean, we came in there basically trying to figure out what it was before we just threw the roof up on top, because we started realizing there were other issues involved. So it was a professional services that come in and have them explore this. Then Sorensen was working over on the Mayo Civic Center roof and dealing with some issues over there. We brought them in and started having them collaborate together to work on figuring out the structure itself and how this was all playing into some of the leaks that were going on. And so that's kind of what we're continuing down that path of this professional services discovery, really, as they go along.
But other contractors or people in town were given that opportunity?
No, I think when we first started...
No, we just chose them.
Yeah.
At that time.
Experience, wow, Jane, did you make the first one? I can't remember where we all started. This has been a while now.
Aaron was brought in initially from one of our roofing vendors, where we were trying to determine how we could address the leaks. And so once we started realizing that it might be more than just a roof membrane, Aaron was nice enough to come in and take a look at some of the walls and seeing some of the deterioration of the walls. So.
One other question. You're going to take the money out of the PIMSTAR account, the 1.8, and do I understand also that you will start allocating a reasonable amount or a nominal amount to that maintenance fund?
I guess with that, if we leave $406,000 in there, I would have a hard time recommending more money for 16, because I think that there are going to be a lot of other needs for 16 that we're not even going to be able to take care of, and this leaves a pretty decent amount, at least for this building.
Okay.
I mean, that's the hole we fall into. We'll never put money back into it because every year there's competing.
Well, that will be a problem.
That's why you can't run this like a... I mean, I completely agree. You can't run it like a utility because there's too many things that need money and now that, you know, the pot isn't overflowing, so you can't figure out where to get it.
The other question I had was the city will buy all the material, and what is the cost of that? That's excluding the 1 point.
That's
including. Okay, yeah. Good.
And we're anticipating that to be about $300,000.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Yeah. All right, anything else?
Okay.
We'll move on that one. I had a few additional items. A couple of these are pretty quick. Mr. Spaeth sent out a revised RFP document for reuse of some of our buildings, such as the Armory. I don't know if people have had a chance to read that revision yet. If you've not, I would just encourage, please get comments back so that we can get that document out. We have some agencies.
We plan on bringing it on the 21st for your official approval.
So read it before then.
Is that a cow or is that a full meeting?
Well, we'll put it on the regular council meeting.
Okay. Next up, I had... We're going to talk a little bit about follow-up, I think, because that's a discussion topic. And then the other item that I had, and I don't know if people have given any more thought, so that we can give staff direction on the streetlight utility proposal that we talked about last time. I know staff would appreciate some direction, whether to include that or not as a revenue source. I know we're probably all getting some comments from the public. And I don't know if anyone has given that topic more thought, but if you would like, and if we'd like to give some more directions to staff, we can do that today as well. Mr. Campion?
I asked RPU for some numbers relative.
Yeah, they're putting together, based on their cost of service study,
wait until we see
some information about updating that schedule.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, my big discussion was what that number would look like, and so we can start talking in actuality about what sort of fee we'd be talking about. So,
and then we still talked about, at that time, you wanted to be relatively straightforward, and I know Michael and Richard have suggested, you know, more of a graduated schedule. The older areas get a different fee than the new areas, and so that's still, but the direction you gave last time was we should stay with someone just across the board.
When did we think that RPU would... have some additional
I don't know. Mark said that they were going to, I think he mentioned something about they're hiring somebody to put $5,000 to do that.
I think it's done already.
Update.
I have the impression it's done.
Maybe it's done. Yeah. It's done.
They're just putting together the
information.
I got the impression it was coming back soon.
No, yeah. The water one's coming back soon. The electric's done.
Okay.
The electric was done last year. I can shed a little bit of additional light on this. One of the interesting things that came out of that cost of service study, and I am going to going from memory here, which is always dangerous, but one of the things we look at is what areas are we effectively subsidizing and what areas are we overpaying. And one of the things that we did is we realized the lighting utility itself was actually costing a lot more than we were putting into the system. So I heard that 1.2, 1.3 figure, but I think it's actually going to come out closer. I think it's 1.6 or 1.7. Again, I'm remembering a number.
I know RPU would like more money.
To reflect the actual cost of providing the lighting, it's more than we've been putting into it. Again, it's you're taking from one hand to the other, so it's a little bit of a push when you're dealing with RPU. A couple of comments here, and I would say I listened to the entire meeting this morning, and I didn't hear any council members explicit. Maybe one explicitly stating that, you know, one level and that's it. That's not what I heard in the recording. But what I would say is, in addition to the discussion that you had about the density of lighting being higher in the new areas, I think the other part that's missing is the number of ratepayers in these more dense, traditional urban areas is substantially higher. So it's not just that there's less lights there, it's that there's a lot more payers there as well. I heard a comment from Mr. Campion that said that, well, I'm looking out for my folks to get them a lower rate, and actually most of my ward would fall into the higher if we just broke it into two groups. I think the best way, if you want to keep it simple, and I'm not about keeping it simple, we have computers and computers work wonderfully, so I'd be happy to go with something proportional to the square root of the area of the parcel, but I get that maybe not everyone is excited about that kind of stuff. The compromise that Richard threw out some time ago to address the regressivity of this thing was that you could take a kind of the point where we transitioned from being an urban city to a suburban city, you know, probably in the 60s or something like that, and the subdivisions that were in place before that have the lower rate, and the subdivisions since then have the higher rate. Not what I would prefer, but it's a simple way, relatively simple, and a much less regressive way of doing that. And and I'm a little bit impartial to it. I want to see the numbers like you do, how it factors in. But just putting everything on the property tax levy is just killing us. And I, you know, with particularly with the larger and larger pieces of nonprofit land out there, it's not just Mayo, it's, you know, these churches that build on 10 acres as well. It's putting a real burden on us. So as much as possible, I'd love to see us diversifying the revenue streams, so long as it's actually beneficial to the folks here in Rochester, and I suspect it will be.
Mr. Breeze, you have a comment?
Yeah, I've had some preliminary discussions with some of the RPU staff, and they share with me the fact that they receive on a rather frequent basis a request for upgrades to the current standard city residential street light, or even the commercial street light. And right now, RPU doesn't have a lot of flexibility that they offer. Their point was that they could offer more flexibility if, in fact, there was a rate that basically covered that. So an ornamental pole costs a lot more than the plastic poles that are being put up in a lot of the subdivisions now. And if that's what the developer wants in the subdivision, they could accommodate that, but there would be a different rate for that, because the electrical rate that you're paying covers the cost of not only electricity, but the cost of the pole and the fixture and the ballast and everything else, the light bulb itself. It covers all of that. The rate includes all of the capital cost as well as the cost of providing the power. And so from that perspective, you potentially would have several different rate structures, both for residential and commercial, and it would give them, again, people who want to pay more or have a more ornamental or decorative lighting fixture, whether it's in downtown Rochester or Shops on Main or some residential subdivision, they theoretically then would pay more than the standard street lighting rate that would again be in some of the older neighborhoods or even in some of the subdivisions where they don't want that. Just want to share that with you as another opportunity to make the cost more equitable based on the service they receive.
One thing that reason that I sort of favored a just one overall rate was right now RPU just bills the city, one person. If they build, they have to build something out that's somewhat complex, then of course that cost goes into it. And we do have some concerns that we need to talk to RPU. We pay, the sewer fund pays $1 million in billing expenses for billing the sewer fees right now. We pay $500,000 for billing the stormwater. And so we actually think that our billing fee from RPU is somewhat excessive for those utilities. And so when we get into this utility, if it gets a complex billing, we'll have quite a bit of a billing expense to RPU in addition to everything else that goes out. Versus right now, they just bill one rate, one bill to the city versus thousands of bills theoretically.
The timing of this is interesting because RPU just got its rate study, or its survey back. We did a scientific survey, and one of the very few things that was more popular than municipally owned broadband was actually, line burial in these existing areas. And another way that you could approach this, if in fact you truly wanted to keep a flat fee, and that's not my preference, but what you could potentially do is essentially base it on the rate for those surrounding areas, and the understanding the core areas are going to effectively overpay, but use that excess and translate that into a line burial fund as well. And which means that, you know, your utility would go beyond what the 1.6 million or whatever the true cost of the lighting is, but those dollars would be specifically used then for upgrading the lighting within the core neighborhoods, probably as opportunity arose for that. You know, and it's one other, my biggest concern, and the reason I opposed it in the past, was the way it was structured initially is very, very regressive.
Campion.
Sorry. Well, so I'll throw it out. I guess the piece that I think has to come along with this, and one of the reasons that I know it ends up being frustrating to prepare all this, is that I think we have to justify any revenue increase with what we're doing. Where is it going? And I think the list of positions that are being added, I think, you know, the changes for providing the same services, we have to have that data at the same time we're looking at possible alternative sources so that it can feel just, you know, it feels like you have the credit and the debit that balance out. So there's some explanation of where the dollars are going, because I do think, you know, some of the feedback I get is, we're already paying for streetlights. Why is it becoming, why is my property tax going to go down the relative amount? I think it's just important that we have a full story to tell instead of trying to tell the story piecemeal, which is, you know, we're going to raise it for these things and you got to wait 3 months to figure out why we're doing that. I'd rather have the pieces put together, have that puzzle to show and explain rather than trying to do a piecemeal. I think we're going to run into a lot of
it. And I would agree. We all want to make an informed decision. Clearly there is a political sensitivity to this question, no doubt. That's what we'll have to deal with. But to your point, the better rooted our decision is, whatever it turns out to be, in factual, hopefully unbiased information, at least in the end, folks may still not agree with our decision, whatever that turns out to be, but at least there should be some story or rationale for the decision. So I think the only urgency at all is that we just wanted to complete that analysis and provide some direction, because we'll need to know that as we move into the budget process.
So right now what we would need to bring back to you, though, I understand the story, but right now what sort of a rate you might leave and look at, Richard, when he and I had our meeting at noon, at 1 o'clock, wanted to know if he could run with it and try to look at some other options, such as Michael suggested, and if that's possible to put that together, then I think, yeah, you should probably have some idea of what the various options might be, along with just the flat rate structure. So I told Richard, yeah, go ahead and see what you can come up with, but we have to make sure that that's something that you also want to look at.
Well, I think there are multiple variables. Certainly simpler is better, you know, or as simple as we can make it, but there's an equity aspect to it. We do want to try to address that as best we can. So I would agree that it's acceptable to look at a variety of options, realizing that some will, they'll all have pros and cons, but again, we make an informed decision. Other comments? Mr. Russell?
I'd be interested in what Michael's talking about. Here he's our RPU board member, and I think if he's got a system that he feels is fair and works, I'd be interested to see what that is.
And RPU, I don't know if I mentioned this, but we're having a study session tomorrow evening, and I think these topics are certainly going to be among the ones that we discuss. So I'll try and get any information back.
Just want to send it out by email. I'd like to get it out by email. Perfect. I'd like to get some supporting information for this as soon as possible, because it is a sensitive issue to start having some discussion.
I'm putting that note in my RPU.
One other thing is, right now the only people that pay for the streetlights are those that pay property taxes. Not everybody pays property taxes.
Do we actually have a figure for the number of the percentage of area that pays property taxes in Rochester, the percentage of payers that pay property taxes? Because I think it's a lot lower than people realize.
I'm sure we could have it. I'm not familiar with it right offhand.
I sent the same question to Mark Krupski to see if he could get that for us.
All right, so we'll get more information on that.
Make a request. When you have your study session regarding the rates, would you please mention that the people that I've heard from on fixed income are really irate that another possibility of an additional tax is being considered?
I suspect that would, I can make that comment. I suspect it would be also assumed.
All right. I have one other topic, and that's the Fowell School area. I'm going to recap this, my understanding, and then you can correct me if I'm wrong. We all received multiple emails, and I know there were several meetings and so on and so forth. My recollection from the council, and speaking with council members, is that we asked for two things, just to try to sort this all out. Much like we would treat any permit parking or something of that nature, we were looking for a petition signed by, you know, the typical 75% or more of the people that are impacted. And secondarily, and to me, most importantly, a letter of support from the school district. Do they want this or not? Because again, I was reading comments, both pro and con, email. So those were the two things that we were asking for. If I've got that wrong, please correct me, because those are the two things I was
looking for. Who were the cons coming from?
Who were the what?
The cons. You said pro and con. Who were the cons
coming
from?
Well, for example, I read in one of the emails, one of the school officials said that part of their drop-off pickup policy is line of sight, that the instructor needs to be able to see the child, you know, and that this would perhaps...
Did that come from the principal, or...?
I'd have to go back and look
at it. I don't remember either, Michael. There was something. It appeared that there wasn't complete agreement.
So, and
the principal changed, and we understood that, you know.
Yeah, and so let me read.
And there was very limited information other than your memo.
Well, and you've gotten some
right,
more information, too. Here's the caveat. This whole time, we've had the school district, the PTSA, the neighborhood association, the police, and the district, as, you know, especially with Scott, who, you know, is obviously close with the city. And despite a note that I saw that went out today, we've never had... The current principal of Falwell has never expressed any objection with any part of the plan, ever. And same thing with the district staff as well. So when I hear this, I'm a little bit wondering where this is coming from. If somebody's telling me, if somebody's sending out information that's contradictory to what I've experienced.
So would it be unreasonable to just see a letter?
No, and actually, there some of the letters went out, and I actually sent a note to Scott and to the new principal as well today, saying, "What's the issue here? Is there something that we haven't talked about that concerns you?" But I've never heard from any of these folks that there are any issues, and I imagine they're probably busy today. But I'm going to certainly follow up on that. And what concerns me a little bit more is the petition, because it seems to me, first of all, we don't have a policy that clearly articulates when we do
and
this and when we don't.
I got some information. I saw these, so I indicated to everybody, that at least there's a process. And you don't necessarily need a petition, just some information. Because the council has to, normally we expect to have some information and have some idea that, you know, the general, there's a majority that may be in favor of the changes that may be proposed. Well, and now today we've gotten that.
Well, and this bothers me a little bit too, because the first note that I sent to you, I went through what the process was and how we notified everybody. And on top of that, we had a traffic engineer at the association meeting where we brought everybody together, and they supported it, you know, by 26-0 vote at that point. And you know, the issue here a little bit is when you do permit parking, it makes perfect sense because the beneficiaries, those that desire it, are the ones that live right there. This is not that situation. We're doing something for the overall area that's for the public safety aspect. The people who are affected by this have typically no reason to support or oppose it. It's new. They have a one-way going to their house, one way in them when they come and one way when they go. It's reversing it. They don't have any stake. They don't have. They're not receiving the benefit from this. So I have a hard time saying that should be the determinant of the public safety in the area for people who are relatively unimpacted by
it. But normally, Michael, if you change somebody's direction in front of the street, you ask them what their feelings may be about.
Right. And that's been done.
But that information then flows to the governing body.
Right.
Now it has, but it hadn't before then.
It was written in that first email that I sent you as well.
Well, I think the comparison we used is the recent Washington school, where we said, okay, here was a letter of support from the school, and I think that...
Well, and the letter of support from the school, that's no problem. I mean, it's as good as done. I don't have any issue with that. Washington, there weren't any neighbors affected by the one-way.
Oh, no, I'm talking about the letter of support.
Yeah, no, and I'm cool with that. And like I say, you know, the PTSA people said, okay, if we need to bang people over the head to get a petition signed, we'll jump through whatever hoop they make us do. But I just think I think this is more similar to when we made some changes to Civic Center Drive recently. We changed the signal timing out there. We did not have anyone petition or even do any notification necessarily for all the people adjacent. And, you know, some of you have seen through C-Click Fix, we've had some complaints that people can't make left turns the way they used to do. And we did it for the overall community. And there was never any talk of a petition for that. And I think this is much the same, but if you're happy with what you have, the notification, that's fine. And I was also going to say, if there's any concern, we can throw a public hearing out there too. We just want to, you know, this has really been a safety issue for a number of years, and we finally got enough people to come together and compromise that I think we have something that works, and this was a year-long process to get to this point. So,
Richard, did you want to comment?
Well, I just, it sounds to me like the issue that's stuck here is the petition, and I think there's, you have two options. One is you can wait for a petition, or basically staff can basically contact, like we do in some other cases, just contact those 8 or 10 property owners there on 17th Avenue and basically ask their opinion, basically in a checkbox box type thing, and get that result back from you and share with you that information. So we can either wait and get the petition, or we can initiate it.
I would just ask if we're going, and I'm relatively removed from this, so you're going to have much more pulse of the neighborhood, but I got one angry phone call about why are we backing off this. And the thing that I think we're going to have to answer is, are we going to let the adjacent property owners override the safety concern for these kids? Like, if we're going to come back and we're going to go pull the neighbors, they're going to say they hate it, and we're going to pass it anyway, you know, why are we going to do that? Or are there people today that are going to say we're going to override the safety concern for these children being dropped off at school with the desires for the neighbors that are directly adjacent? And I'm not hearing that.
Build it back. My concern is this. I want to know what the school says and their interest, and I'm interested in our traffic engineers. They're going to tell us, if we're talking about a safety issue, they're the ones who I'm looking for to come back and have that kind of answer. I'm not so worried about a petition. But I do want to hear from the school, and I do want to hear from our traffic engineers.
So I agree that I'm a bit confused. Like, it, from the person that called me, it was a cut dry case. So I did want to maybe hear from the traffic engineer if he has stuff to add about where this is at and if this is a clear safety concern. But and ultimately, that's what I need.
Well, one thing I want to throw out too is that the reversing the one way was not my preferred solution. This is a very low traffic road. And my personal take is we have two-way traffic on alleys all the time. It's 16 feet wide, have two-way traffic there. I have no issue with that. That was something that I definitely didn't like that one. Yep. So,
George, comment.
Well, just a few things to kind of update where we're at. We did have a meeting with the school. The school district, the new principal, along with Scott Sheridan, our safety coordinator, as well as the police department and myself, to talk about, did the school support the plan that was being proposed by Councilman Bojack? At the meeting, the principal did have some issues with certain aspects of the plan.
When did this meeting occur?
Last Wednesday.
Okay. So recently. All right.
So recently. So we looked at the plan and developed a plan and two different phases to address the issues out there, but also something that the school was going to support. So, and I think there was a email that Scott Sheridan sent out that had the new plan. Did you see that?
I don't know, the weekend.
Yeah, I saw it.
You all got it over the weekend.
All of that, okay.
Yeah. Okay, because I've got some copies of that here. And it has a number of the elements.
George, you want to come up here so they can all see you?
Yeah, thank you.
And I don't know, and we do have to kind of have a hard stop at 5 o'clock. I don't know if we may not solve this, but I think we wanted to give some direction on or what we need.
Oh, and so I just want to make sure I understand. What is before us is the plan that the school agreed to.
This is the plan that the school can support, and this is something that they sent out.
You made the comment, though, that there were some things that the school couldn't support, and I sent a note to Wendy because I specifically want to know, what was it that they don't support? I mean, that's where I'm struggling with this, is I've never gotten that answer to what is it that Scott and Wendy don't support that's in here.
This is what you're seeing now is what they
but what part of the plan before didn't they support?
Where some of the pickup and drop-off areas were being proposed.
Where they were
and
being proposed.
And the sequence, the traffic pattern of how to get to them.
I mean, do you have a note from them or anything that, this is part of the frustration. I sent the note to them, and I haven't gotten a response. But I don't know. It's just complete news to me that they had any concerns over this because we met face to face to discuss this stuff.
Well, and maybe that's what comes out of it today is we just need to reconcile that. The council is not opposed to making changes, and certainly for public safety, but clearly some of the experts that are deal with it day in and day out, like the school, that's all we're looking for is because we're getting, at least as I read through the emails, I was getting mixed messages, so I just wanted to have some assurance, Mr. Camp.
And I want to make sure that the onus is on the school to agree to a fix here that's going to fix the problem, because what I was getting from concerned parents is, why is the city council delaying this? And it sounds like council member Wojcik has put significant effort into this, and now we have the traffic engineer involved. Is there something today that the school district and council member Wojcik will agree on? If there is, let's make the fix, and let's do what it takes to make this a safe situation. And so is there something we're ready to operate on? Is there something we could be ready to endorse tonight? Do we need endorsement? Is this something
no,
you guys
we're not
resolve?
Ready. I'm sending another note to the principal and to Scott Sheridan, just, clearly articulate what the issues were before. I mean, this is just, right before we left, we all met, and there were no issues. And, in fact, that note that you all got, that I sent through Stephen, they reviewed that note before I sent it.
Question for Terry.
Wake up.
Sooner or later, you have to be a lead owner. Okay. So the plan includes the closure of 15th Avenue between 6th and 7th Streets during the arrival and departure times of children from the school. The closure will occur by the crossing guard placing cones across the street. If there are complaints about people not respecting this street closure during that period of time, and the police are called and they issue tickets, if the council hasn't adopted this Falwell School traffic management plan, first, they'll call it that, will that ticket survive scrutiny?
What would the ticket be issued for?
Operating a closed street. Street's closed.
But not by council action.
Not by council action.
It would be very hard to pursue that case.
Okay. And does the school have the authority to close a street without council action?
I'm unaware of any such authority.
Okay. So my suggestion is part of what has to be done here. I don't want to make this any more bureaucratic than it already has become. But I would like the council, I think, for this benefit of everyone, to adopt these school traffic management plans and adopt it by resolution. It's there if that's what it is. And so when it comes to enforcement, if there's liability issues, if somebody is hit in this zone by a car that disregards the closure signs or whatever.
I agree. The school district is definitely a partner in this, and there should be some agreed upon and formal action. What it really comes down to for me is it seems like we have a plan A that was originally promoted by Councilmember Wojcik, and now maybe a plan B. And I'm just looking for some way to reconcile, and preferably from the school to say, what do you prefer here? So that, again, we can proceed to that sort of formal selection and action.
Well, this one that I just handed out, this is something that the school is supporting. They've already implemented it. They sent this out to parents so that they would know what to do on the first day of school.
They already implemented this
how? Using
cones?
It's out there today. I drove by it. Yeah. They have their own clothes.
I was out there the first day.
So
we do have officers out there.
Yeah, and the police have been out there to...
They're out there every day?
Yeah. help direct traffic.
So, how much different is it?
The issue that Richard brings up is a legal issue, but in the short run, it's a little bit more of a non-issue. We need to formalize this, as he says, but the only people that are using that street at that time are Falwell parents who are getting the message from the school. So, you know, while it's, you know, we'll have to formalize everything, but I don't think it's a...
So the school is already promoting this.
Yeah.
They are implementing, and this, what you see as far as the plan on the map, that's what's implemented. There are two other pieces that they want to do, and what they show on the map really doesn't require any city council action. The two actions that does require city council action is changing that one-way in the frontage from 17th Avenue, and they have said that they will go out, the school will go out, and seek the petitions from the people that are along that road. And the other thing they want is a no parking zone on 7th Street next to the school, and they're going to be sending a letter to the city about that. So when we get those two petitions, those are the items that, at least I feel, that the city needs to act on.
And you don't need a petition for either one of those. Past practice, you wanted that, but you don't need a petition to do it. You could take an action tonight to implement the plan, and you don't need a petition for either one of those.
I get that.
And I think the thing with
they don't need it, but normally they seek it.
For parking.
I guess one of the other things about having the city approve these procedures for parent pickup and drop-offs, we have not done that anywhere else.
Yes.
That's a school function. They're the ones that put together the plan. Yes, they seek advice from the city. You know, usually me and the police department are meeting with them on these issues. And then as part of the plan, they may have features like parking regulations or the one-way regulations that might require city action, that they send a letter to essentially us saying that they want these regulations implemented. And that's what we bring to the council. It's particularly things like bus loading zones or passenger drop-off zones or the one-way situation or changes in the parking regulations, how far the no parking is here and there. Those are the types of actions that the city council usually is taking action on. It's not approving the school pickup and drop-off procedures plan.
After doing this, and I mean, you can see why it took a year to get to this point. I mean, if there was an easy solution, it would have been done 20 years ago. This has been a persistent problem, and it really took a lot of hammering to get everyone in the same room to come up with some compromises. But the result of this has been the district has asked me to work with some other schools because this has been addressing a long-time issue, and they hope to see more of this going forward. They feel that this is going to really address some of the safety issues that they have there.
So, with respect to your comment about the petition, it's not a requirement. If this plan is being proposed or is endorsed by the school, and let's say we don't do the petition, what other additional information would we need to turn in this into a formal action so that we meet Mr. Atkins? What he spoke about, do you still have some concerns from a traffic engineering standpoint, with this plan?
Yeah, that one. No, this plan is okay as far as is what they're proposing.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said about it.
I don't know if I should tell you. There is going to be reservations about whatever you do out here on the street. Because the underlying problem is that these schools were not designed to have large volumes of pickup and drop-off parents coming to the schools. And it's not just this school, it's every school. So Washington School, Harriet Bishop School, Gibbs School, I've been to them and I've worked with them to try to come up with solutions to it. The schools were not designed for this. This one is even more limited because you have very few streets that actually abut the school.
I just have, just looking at this, I bring it up on Google Earth here, and it looks like there's a few homes that have access on 15th Avenue Southwest through their driveways and that. I guess I'm just just to be fair to them, to have their road closed, I'd like to make sure they're aware when they know that this is happening, and they at least somewhat, at least, first of all, I think the biggest thing is that they are aware of it. And so are they all in? Are they all aware, and they're all...
They're aware of it, and then part of the school's plan is it's not just... if there are residents on that section of street that's closed that want to come in or out, they can come in and out as they desire.
So then
it's just kind of the through traffic that they're going to be blocked.
Two of the three that access the most affected areas were part of our group working on this.
Ricky.
I might have missed this part, but then how did, just out of curiosity, how do they determine who's, what through traffic's allowed? What do they show for a certification or a permit, or
as far as
so, who's I'm a resident. I live on that street. Do I just tell the crossing guard, or
yeah.
They
and
they,
if you don't go to a house on the street, they'll know you're lying.
Okay.
There's not many there. So
right.
There's not. It's only the one side, and there's not many houses that we're talking about.
So the other part, too, is, I mean, we could go ahead and just adopt this plan. I know there's more details that might come in the future, but the only thing is if we adopted this one, we'd have to also adopt the 15th would change when we reverse the direction of 17th.
So, and again, that would be, the school was talking about, and they mentioned it here in the text that they have with the plan, is that's kind of the phase two, along with there is going to be that. They want to change the parking regulations on the north side of 7th Street next to the school, too.
There.
To change that to a timed
parking zone. One of the things about 17 is that we brought flyers out there and we had all my contact information out there just so if anyone had any questions or concerns, they could contact. And we never had anyone that contacted us that was opposed to it. But I'd have to say in this particular case with how the double parking and the traffic backup is, if every single person on 17th opposed us switching the direction of the one-way, I'd do it anyway. It's still better for the safety of the kids around there. And, you know, to George's point, we can't handle this kind of, the schools were not built to handle this kind of automobile traffic. They were built to be walkable neighborhood schools. We have a number of parents who are part of this process that expressed the issue is, we won't let our kids walk there because it's so unsafe in front of the school. There's no safe place to cross. And that's, you know, complicating the matter because you got kids who could walk and would walk, but the parents won't let them walk because of the safety issues. So, you know, it sounds like we're okay with the, you know, not doing the petition there right now, but the whole thing is if everyone opposed this, it's still the right thing to do for the neighborhood.
Other thoughts? Mr. Russell?
Well, Aaron mentioned that there's police officers present every day. Is that right? And they have this problem at every school. So there are police officers at every school every day doing this?
I'm not aware of other schools in the
How that works.
I'm not aware of other schools either. I wasn't even aware of that.
This one in Sunset Terrace, I think, is the other one that has some right now. And I think part of the reason they're out there right now is because of the changes.
Yeah, I don't think it's a permanent.
It's not. It's not. This is a temporary thing.
It's part of the implementation.
Okay.
So, where are we at? What do we need to do against the closure?
Good question. Make a petition out of this?
No, let's go.
I
would say let's approve this plan and the reversal of the direction of 17th Avenue, and let's get the because obviously the school supports those parts, and we'll get to figure out what the other details.
It's the corollary you've added: approve this and reverse the direction of 17th.
Yep.
As a school, or are we going to care about that? We reverse that.
It does say down under reminders. It says phase two includes a petition to change the direction of 17th Avenue southwest from northbound to southbound.
Yeah.
I would say that reversal has to be part of your. Because right now what you're doing is you're sending traffic down that 15th Avenue cul-de-sac and bringing it right back to that intersection of 15th and 7th. You're putting twice as much traffic in that intersection where all the kids are going to be that you don't need to do.
And they're and half of them are going the wrong way on the one-way anyway.
So to that point, phase two says that there will be a petition to change that direction, and we can...
Good point. Let's just approve phase one and phase two.
Say that again, just approve phase one?
Phase one and phase two.
And phase two includes getting a petition or issuing a petition, right?
Oh, no, I guess.
Oh, maybe I'm reading that wrong. Are they saying that phase two will include a petition? Or
well, phase two is the reversal of the traffic direction.
But are they saying the petition has been done and...
No, the petition.
Or it has not been done yet.
I mean, phase one... I understand that phase one's already been executed because I went through by today on the way and it was closed. So if that's phase one, then we can move on to phase two, which is getting city policy squared away.
So I get that. I'm caught up on what would we have been...
So I guess back to what Michael had said. So if we've kind of determined that we need to do it, what's the petition going to tell us? I mean,
how many people are mad at me?
Right.
Well, normally you want to receive some input about the things that you do.
Oh, I'm sure I'll get plenty.
Well, I mean, for the council, before you do it, I mean, there's the courtesy somewhat to at least let them know you're going to be doing it.
So,
now, maybe they already know that.
So maybe the easiest thing at this point is just phase one, I think everybody's in complete agreement with. I mean, this problem's been here for a long time. Mm-hmm. We can push phase two to the next meeting, potentially.
Do you guys go to school there?
No.
Okay. So we're in agreement for phase one.
I'm fine with, I don't know what we're going to learn on phase two between this meeting and the next.
The information I've sent out indicates that six people on 17th Avenue, six people have already received notice, or not notice, but a copy of the plan. Mm-hmm. This is the mailing list that they sent out to.
It was a hand-delivered list. Yep.
Of addresses, and there's 17 people on 17th Avenue, six people on 17th Avenue that have received the information packet.
And in addition, I think a few of them are rentals, and they went so far as to, I had them check the property taxpayer versus the person living there, and if that was not the case, they also sent a copy to the property taxpayers.
And we've received all that back yet, or it's still in process?
There wasn't a return, per se. What it was is had all the contact information. If you have any concerns about this or want to weigh in, here's the contact information, and a total of four people from all the areas distributed responded. Three in favor, one with some questions.
Okay.
Not opposed, just a lot of questions.
Typically, and that sounds more like a passive system. Typically with our petitions, they're more active. You sign it if you agree. Mm-hmm. This sounds like if you don't happen to say anything, we assume you agree.
Well, and frankly, like I said, even if they don't agree, still the right thing to do.
You got a petition that's not certified. Are you even going to accept the signatures? So
no notaries. We don't require notaries. And I guess the other part of this too is that the fact that the whole neighborhood association, I mean, they made a point to again pass out, hand deliver these invitations to the neighborhood association meeting. 26 people from throughout the neighborhood showed up for that, and you know.
Okay. So I guess you asked what could accomplish between now and the next meeting. The only thing I would care about is, and maybe I misinterpreted that statement about phase two. So is the school assuming that's going to happen? And do they care?
The school has been assuming that the city council is forcing them to go out and do a petition to people who do not necessarily benefit from the changes. And that's why that's in there.
Any other comments? Where do you want to go? Anything else?
Well, you know, I want to get. We were hoping to have this all done by the start of school, and you know, I think the one thing that I suggest in the letter that I wrote was that if there really is a concern about reaching out to these people, then we can send them a notice from Public Works as well. But ultimately, it's six people, and you can see just by the way the roadmap works here why it's needed.
Do you want to have an RCA for the 21st? Do you want to do phase one tonight and then phase two considered on the 21st? Or how do you want to do that?
I
think fixing 17th now seems like the way to go here. I mean, I think we have
other business tonight. You could approve phase one or something.
I mean, it's the recommendation of Public Works that we'd have to reverse 17th to make this work.
Yes, I mean, if you're going to do phase one, if you're going to do this, you've got to... The plan, you've got to do both phases. You can't.
Richard, would you write me up a I don't know, not a full RCA, but just a description of exactly what it is we're doing for tonight. Yep. Usually ask Terry for that, but Terry corrects.
Well, you'd be asking for a resolution.
Put the parking thing out there, too.
Yep, please.
Would it be a problem to eliminate?
They're going to tell me what time they want, because they want a specific time, so yeah, I don't know what time.
But this is by the school.
I don't think we need to act on it tonight, because it's more, they want to change the parking there so they can have some of their staff essentially use that as a parking area. So it's not critical to this current drop-off.
Well, has the parking been part of the... No, the parking hasn't been part of your discussion. The parking on 7th Street you're talking about?
Let's not deal with the parking portion. Let's change the street.
Yeah. No, that was news to me, that part. So.
Then you'll get some...
Well, and part of the reason we've been trying to keep this consistent is because we brought so many different groups with different opinions together, and we're trying to make sure one doesn't take the last minute to take away something the other group was after.
I mean, I have no problem with phase 1 and 2.
Okay, let's do that.
Approving those.
And if you could just, you know, print out 7 copies for us then.
But would not the language then in phase 2 need to restrict? It says petition.
Yes.
That was a newsletter that was sent out, by the city.
That won't be part of the
gotcha.
Okay. I have one other real quick thing. It looks like the 21st is looking to be a good-sized cow meeting. Would people be opposed to starting a half hour earlier, start at 3 o'clock?
I would love to.
Any more time with this group of people? How
can it's quality time. It's quality. All right. Anything else?
Piece of the 21st?
Yes.
Sorry.
George.
George.